Thank you so much for taking time to listen to this week's message. It's our hope that this resource will grow you in your faith, hope, and love for Jesus. Please help us get the word out by following us on social media and sharing resources just like this. And if this message has inspired you to take your next step in faith, please let us know by reaching out to us through social media or the church office. We are praying and believing that God will change you through His word today. Blessings. Well, a couple years ago, the Myers family, when we were a family of five, we hadn't had faith yet, we decided we were going to take a family day trip to Odra State Park in Buchanan. So I don't know if you've been there. It's beautiful. Gwen was small enough that I could put her in a backpack on my shoulders. Jeremiah and Amelia were just big enough. They could walk solo. We were going to have a great day, make some fun memories, and then, you know, chalk it up as those families who do things like that, because honestly, we're not the kind of family that does things like that. So we decided that we're going to hit the walking trail. And in Odra, they had a specific trail that was a massive loop. So you start on one spot and you go all the way around the park and then you end up back at the beginning. And so it started off as a great walk. Hey, we're having fun. We're seeing nature. We're doing the things that it feels like parents like us should be doing. And then 30 minutes in, I'm noticing something strange. The trail is changing. All right, it's changing. And so what started off as a clear dirt path begins to fade into some unpatched forest. Now, I didn't know it yet, but we were lost, okay? And I didn't know it yet, all right? I got a lot of confidence in this moment, leading the pack. Now, 10 minutes later, I realized we were lost. And this was a problem because you got to understand something. I'm the dad, all right? I'm the dad. I'm the leader of the family in this moment. I am the only giant-sized human being that if something goes down in the woods of West Virginia, I'm it. And I'm freaking out right now, okay? But I'm trying to be strong because I've got a kid on my back and I've got two kids behind me, and I'm trying to be strong. And so we are out of cell service. We are out of walking path. And we're about 15 minutes away, I believe, from being on the 6 o'clock news, all right? I think that someone's going to have to come find us. And so long story short, we got back. We made it, and we're getting ready to walk back into the entrance of the park. And Elise, my wife, she looks at me and she goes, whew. She goes, you know, for a minute there, I thought we were lost. And I said, oh, we were definitely lost. To which she says, wow, you handled that well. I was like, well, I was dying on the inside, all right? I think that sometimes the only thing that is worse than being lost is being lost and not even knowing it. You ever been there before? Like, I realize, sitting here at 41, there is a generation of people in this room that has no clue the anxiety of going on a family road trip 20 years ago, and the only thing you have to get you from point A to B is a giant-size AAA map, right? Come on now, some of y'all are with me, and the only thing I got from point A to B is a highlighted path, okay? That is a different level of anxiety, people, all right? Because listen, if the person at the travel agency doesn't know where the detours is, and they never did, you could take a detour and you could be lost for an hour 20 years ago driving, and you don't got Siri to bail you out. Like, that is a different kind of lost, right? And so this idea of being lost and not even knowing it, it doesn't just apply to road trips or hikes. We see this happen in parenting. We see this happening in marriage. We see this happening in money. Listen, parents, some of y'all, maybe you haven't been here yet, but the Myers family, we've been here. Several nights we've been here. You spend so many years raising up your sweet little children to see them only become teenagers. And then one night you're laying in bed and you go, you know what? I think we messed up. Like, I think we made some decisions at 7 that aren't playing out well at 13, all right? I think we have gotten lost and we didn't know it. Or maybe you started an argument with your spouse and you say what you think are the best words for the moment. And the moment they leave your mouth, come on now, you realize that That played out differently in my head. That played out. This whole thing played out differently. I didn't realize the moment I said that I was lost, man. I didn't even know it. And then maybe for some of us, you've made the investment. You booked the trip. You bought the gift. You got the car. Because you believed that the memories, the moment, the mileage, you thought it was going to be worth it. But guess what happened when that first payment comes in the mail? What you really did was you bought the feeling for the future, right? You bought the feeling for the future, and you were lost before you made that purchase, and you didn't even know it. So from small arguments to big financial decisions, it is easy to get lost and not even know it. So we're in a series called The Prodigal God. And it is a controversial story that Jesus tells to sinners, tax collectors, and Pharisees. It is a story that redefines grace. It rewrites history. It is about a dad and his two boys. And before Jesus shares this story in Luke 15, he actually tells two other stories that we've not covered yet. See, the story of this father and his son, it's a part of a bigger story that Jesus is trying to tell. So at the beginning of Luke 15, Jesus first talks about a lost sheep. And he talks about a shepherd who will leave 99. He'll leave the rest of his flock to go and save this lost sheep. And then he talks about a lost coin and a woman who will tear her house apart until she finds the coin. Both of those stories end in celebration and they end in joy because something that was valuable was lost and found. And then in verse 11, Jesus tells us about a lost son. Now, we spent the last 2 weeks diving into this story. We've been looking at the younger son through the eyes of the father. And here's what we've learned over the last 2 weeks. Week one, we learned this, that your worst moment doesn't have to be your last. That was the whole point of week one. That's the point of the story. Your worst moment, friends, because the gospel, it doesn't have to be your last moment. And then last week, we digged a little deeper into what did it mean for the father to bring the son back home. And we learned that grace doesn't wait for you to be clean, right? What does grace do? Grace meets you in the mess and it walks you home. That was week two. And so here's where we're at in the series. The son comes home, the father runs, the steak is cooked, and the party is on. Like, that's where we're at in the story. But then something happens. This third story, it doesn't follow the same pattern that the story of the lost sheep and the story of the lost coin follows. Jesus, who, by the way, is a master storyteller, pulls out an M. Night Shyamalan on us. Now, if you don't know who that is, Sixth Sense. All right, I know that dates me, but some of y'all in the room, you're nodding, same generation that probably unfolded the AAA map. You know what I'm talking about, right? Jesus pulls an M. Night Shyamalan, and he reveals that there is a plot twist to this story. That this story that Jesus is telling at the end of 15, this is not a story about the younger brother. Now, true, the people listening, the sinners and the tax collectors, the grace the father gives to the younger son, they receive that. That's encouraging to them. But this is not a story, friends, about the younger brother. This is a story about the Pharisees. That's who Jesus is talking to. It is not meant to be a sentimental message, but Jesus is revealing this. That everything you've ever heard or thought about approaching God is wrong. And so, in the middle of this story, we finally get introduced to Big Brother. And so, we pick up the narrative and it says this. Meanwhile, the older son was in the fields working. And when he returned home, he heard music and dancing in the house. So we got older brother. He's the one that stayed, right? He's the one that remained faithful. He's out there working for dad. He's tired. It's been a long day. He's dirty. He starts heading home. And what does he hear? He hears what? Music and what? Dancing. He hears the music. He hears the dancing. Now let's just be real, y'all. There are parties. And then there are parties, all right? And I don't know who you were in high school. I didn't get invited to any party, all right? I was the older brother in high school. Ain't nobody inviting me to the party. But I knew a lot of younger sons, man, and they could party. And this is a party. And the son, the older brother, he is confused. He's like,
Music, is it Christmas? Like, what is happening right now? So he asks, and it says he asked one of the servants what was going on, and here's the servant's reply. Your brother is back, he was told, and your father has killed the fattened calf. We are celebrating because of his safe return. What? Like, this is a little hard to believe. Okay, listen, let's just, where are my rule followers at? Raise your hand, because you know you're proud of it. Where are my rule followers at? Come on now, I know I'm not the only one. There we go. Where are my rule followers at? This is unbelievable. Now listen, I have shared this struggle with you before. Following rules is actually a hobby of mine, all right? It's something I'm working through, but I am a hobbyist when it comes to following rules. I mean, you guys remember this? I told you once before, I was hanging out in fifth grade at a friend's house having a sleepover, and his parents in his household, they were allowed to watch rated R movies. So they put a rated R movie in. I'm thinking, this is not okay. So I walk up to his mom and I say, hey, my mom would not appreciate us watching this rated R movie. And she leaned in, she goes, well, sweetie, if you don't tell, I won't. Well, that's gonna be a problem. Because I just called her and told her to come pick me up. All right, like that's where I'm at. A matter of fact, I'm such a rule follower. Last week, I got to go see Zach Roush in the hospital. And for those of you who are praying for Zach, hey, Zach's out of the hospital. He's back home. Praise God for that. And so I go to see Zach in the hospital, and he's pretty sick. And as I get ready to walk into the door, there's a big sign that says, please check in with the nurse before you walk in. So guess what I did? I checked in with the nurse, because that's what the sign says. So I check in, and she gives me the rules, and I go in. I sit down with Zach and Jason. We're having a great conversation. Nurse comes in to check on Zach, and the nurse looks at me, and she goes, you know, you're the only visitor that checked with me before coming into this room. I gotta be honest. I was flattered by the compliment, and at the same time offended that nobody else would follow the rules. What's the point of the sign if we're not going to follow the rules? Like, that's where I'm at. So I get the angst of the older brother. He's like, what? We throwing a party? Dad's cooking steak? Oh, no. Oh, no. And look at the older brother's response to this. Jesus tells us that the older brother was angry and he wouldn't go in. That's the play. He's like, you know what? I'm just going to stand outside and I'm going to pout. I'm going to stare at the party with angst and I'm going to pout outside. That is the big play from the older brother. Now, you can read this and think, man, that's so childish. That's so silly. But you got to understand something. In the first century, this act of not going into the party, not recognizing the son coming home, not honoring the father. This is detrimental. In the first century, this was disrespectful. This was dishonoring. And what we're going to learn here in a couple minutes is that the son's physical act of staying outside of the house, it's actually a symbolic tearing away from the family. So then what's the father's response to this childish behavior? Well, Jesus tells us. He said his father came out and he begged him. So we're partying. Man, we eating medium rare steak, because if you don't eat medium rare steak, then don't eat the steak, all right? So like we dancing. Someone comes up and says, hey, your oldest boy, he's outside. Well, invite him in. Invite him in. Let's party. Let's celebrate. He goes, no, he's not coming in. He's angry. So what does dad do? Dad goes out. Other translations would say that he pleaded with his boy, that he entreated his boy. He walks out and he goes, what are you doing? What are you doing out here? Your son is, your brother, he's back. Come in the house, celebrate. I want my family together. I want my boys together. We're reunited. I love you. I love him. I want us sitting at the table. Come inside. Now, I'll be honest with you, that's not what I would have done. No. If I would have heard that my son was pouting outside, and I said, y'all been there, you can do one of these things. Get in the house right now. Get in the house right now. And depending on how you were raised, maybe there might be some other words that you put in that statement, all right? This is not peaceful. Are you kidding me? You would embarrass me by standing out here and pouting? This is your brother. He was dead to us, and now he's back. And you would say, but that's not what he does. He pleads with the older brother. He pleads with him, come in the house. I love you. I love my sons. Later on, Jesus tells us that the father would add, we had to celebrate this happy day. It was never a question. We had to celebrate this day. Now, listen, for some of y'all that hung out with us last week, y'all knew the father knew this day was coming, didn't he? Remember, he sat in that chair because that's what grace looks like. Grace looks like an empty chair looking down the road, waiting for your boy to come home. He knew this day was coming. He says, we had to celebrate this happy day, for your brother was dead and has come back to life. He was lost and he is found. We had to celebrate. But now it's the older son's turn to dishonor the father. And here's what he says. But he answered his father, look, all these years I've been slaving for you and never disobeyed your orders. Yet you never gave me even a young goat so I could celebrate with my friends. Yet when this son of yours comes back, after squandering your money on prostitutes, you celebrate by killing the fattened calf. How could you do this? And this is a different level of awkward. This is like that weird like record thing screeches, the music stops, people get up by the door, they're looking out at the son, yelling and berating the father. This is awkward. And I read this and I think, when you take the whole thing into example, the whole picture of what's happening, there is a party, there is a son, and outside of the house is the older brother condemning his father. And I think, how do we get here? Now we've got the party of the year, all you can eat steak. The brother is back from the dead. Like, this behavior, it's so ridiculous. And even his request, like, that's the thing about this. You just know, like, he's just out of his mind. Like, the older brother, his defense to this, right? He looks at the father and he goes, you didn't even give me a goat for my friends. And I'm the dad. I'm like, did you say boat or goat? Because like a boat, I get it, right? Listen, get me a boat, dad. Let's go party on the yacht out on the river. And no, he goes, you didn't even give me a goat. You just get the fattened calf for him. I don't even get a little goat to have a party with my friends. I mean, it's so ridiculous. And I think the answer to the question is, how do we get here? It's the same answer last week. Control. Control is how we got here. That just like his younger brother, the older brother just wants the father's stuff, but he doesn't want the father's heart. And you know it by what he says. He goes, I have been slaving for you all these years. I've slaved for you. When you look at the term of the text, the son does not see his dad as a father. He sees his dad as a slave master. He said, all these years I've stayed here. All these years I've worked for you. I've slaved for you. And then he goes, and I've never disobeyed your orders. I've done everything you asked. I've never disobeyed your orders. He does not see his dad as a father, but as a master. He sees this as a transactional relationship. And what you discover is that it was never about the family for the older brother. It was always about the finances. And again, we don't understand it in 2025, but in the first century, the language that he uses to respond to his father, the people listening to the story, they would understand how disrespectful it is. He doesn't even address him as father. He goes, look what you did. Look at you. Look, you would bring him back in. You would throw this extravagant party. You would kill the fattened calf. Look at what you did. He doesn't even recognize him as father. And then, do you notice what he says? He goes, this son of yours, it's not my brother. And he's saying, it's not my family. This son of yours. He wants nothing to do with the family. And you know what the older brother is overwhelmed by? The cost of it all. He's overwhelmed by the cost of it all. He would look at his dad and he would say, he squanders money on prostitutes. and you celebrate him by killing the fattened calf. Now, there's all this talk about this fattened calf, right? And some of y'all are like, I don't get it. It's just steak, okay? Like, it's more than that. You got to understand, again, in the first century, and the listeners, they get this, is that meat was a delicacy. You didn't eat it all the time. And the most expensive meat was the fattened calf. So to do this, to kill the fattened calf, this isn't just a meal for the family. This is a meal for the village. Man, we inviting everybody. Man, we're going party. Everybody gets to come in. Everybody gets to walk into the house. Everybody gets to celebrate that the son that was dead is now alive. And this moment, it's not just an important day. It's the most important day. By killing the calf, the father is saying, this is the most important day of my life. And I want my family celebrating what was lost that is now found. And the older son, he knows this. He knows all that. He knows that there would never be a moment other than this for the calf to be killed and the party to happen. And you know what? He doesn't care. He doesn't care. And so, like, here we are in this moment. Jesus, I mean, I'm on the edge of my seat thinking, man, what? All right, what's going to happen? He pleads with the boy. He says, come back in the house. We got to celebrate. And then, just as we wait to see what Jesus says next, he ends the story. Credits roll, lights come up, and we're all wondering why. Why not finish it? Why not tell us what the older brother does? And I think the reason why Jesus does that is because in this moment, with tax collectors and sinners on one side of the room and Pharisees on the other, Jesus is not interested in resolution. He wants redemption. What he's about to say, what he is saying, what he's about to do, Jesus is about to redefine the very heart of the gospel. And so the first thing that Jesus does is he redefines the Father. What you know when you look at the story is that the heart of the Father is the heart of the gospel. Now, let's be real. The term Father is pretty loaded in this room, is it not? Some of y'all, you had dads growing up that crushed it. And some of y'all, you had dads that crushed you. So that term, that's a tough term. And we got to be real careful because we like to project, right? And it's really easy to project our experiences. And if we're not careful, it's easy to believe that God is just a bigger version of our broken experiences. That's why a lot of people won't even walk through these doors. They won't have a conversation about God. Won't even give the gospel a chance because they got some dad issues. And what we find, not just in this story, but ultimately what we find with Jesus stepping into flesh, coming into earth, showing us who God is that God is not the reflection of our earthly fathers. Rather, he is the perfection of what a father is meant to be. That's what Jesus is telling us. He's redefining the role of the father, that God is not a reflection of our earthly dads. He is what our earthly dads are meant to be. And so what's important as we hear the story of the two sons, what's important is we got to realize both boys misunderstood their dad. Both boys misunderstood what was happening with their father because both tried to earn from their father. The younger son, he comes back after sinning and says, I want to earn it back through slaving for you. But the older son, he didn't go anywhere. He worked hard. He says, I'm going to earn it through serving you. And here's what I think we need to understand. You can live in the father's house, but you can be far from the father's heart. And I've been a church kid long enough to know this. I've worshiped shoulder to shoulder with a lot of people that say they follow in Jesus, but their life is not a reflection of that. You can be in the Father's home and you can be far from the Father's heart. And what Jesus is telling these tax collectors and these sinners, and what he's telling these Pharisees, what he is telling all of us about the gospel is this, that the gospel is for both the prodigal and the proud. The gospel is for all of us. And what Jesus shows us through this incredible, scandalous story is not a father who punishes us, but a father who pursues us. And this is where I think so many of us check out on the gospel, that in our mind we have created this image of God that is just waiting to destroy everything in our life. That he's got the checklist, and he's marking off the good deeds compared to the bad deeds, and he's tallying up the score to see if you're worthy enough to be in his house. And I get it. Some of y'all, you've bailed on that version of God and said, if that's who God is, I'm out. And friend, I'm lovingly here to tell you today, that's not who God is. What unfortunately has happened for a lot of us is we've created a false image of God because, get this, it's easier to deny what's not real than to come to the reality that I have to surrender to what is real. And if I can just say this in love, and I got dad issues, all right? So I understand. If we got a cup of coffee in an hour, we could talk through some things. But because of what I've experienced through men and women in my life who are broken and sinful, that does not give me an excuse to punt on God. That is not fair to God. We have a father who doesn't punish us. He pursues us. The young son comes home. The father runs to him. The older brother stays outside. The father pleads with him. God longs for your heart. What does he say to the older boys? He says, come inside. What are you doing? Let's celebrate. This is the best day of my life. My family is back together. My lost son is home. And all this dad wants is to sit at a table, eat some steak with his boys, and be with them. So Jesus redefines what the Father is. But Jesus also redefines what sin is. Now this is where it starts to get spicy, especially for these Pharisees. Jesus is redefining sin. This story is not about breaking rules. It's about breaking relationship. One son sins by being bad. But the brother, he sins by being good. And it redefines what both people in this story are listening. The Pharisees, they can't believe what they're hearing. I know we read this story, and man, we're teary-eyed at the end, thinking about the love, the grace, and the mercy of the Father. And I bet those sinners and tax collectors were feeling it. But I'm going to tell you something right now. These Pharisees, they weren't crying. They were furious. That's why what Jesus does, it's the kind of story that gets you killed. They never killed him for what he did. They killed him because of what he said. The younger son wanted control, so he left. The older brother, he wanted control, so he stayed. The younger son, he sinned by breaking all the rules, and the older brother, he sinned by keeping all the rules because they both wanted control. They didn't want the father's heart. They wanted the father's stuff. They both wanted to control him. And because of that, they were both broken. And I think we got to realize this, right? Because we've all come into this room different, okay? I'm a church kid. I got that just running through my bones, and I'm thankful for it, proud of it, through all of the good and bad. And some of us on here, we ain't church kids, all right? That wasn't your testimony. God didn't get a hold of you till late. Here's what I want to encourage you with today. Rebellion takes different shapes. Some of us rebel with sinful living, and some of us, we rebel with Sunday school. Jesus is tearing down this idea of what sin really looks like. It's about breaking relationships. It's about trying to control the Father when the Father just wants your heart. And we got to be careful. We got to be careful because we tend to think that sin is obvious, right? Like the younger brother's sin, man, that is obvious. That guy went and he wasted it on some wasteful living. So there was some partying, there was some alcohol, there were some drugs. The older brother alluded, there were some prostitutes. Like, it's easy to point to that and goes, that is sin. But listen, there is a kind of sin that strays from the Father, and there is a kind of sin that stays. The gospel, that's what Jesus is trying to say. The gospel is not about good behavior. The gospel is about coming home. It's about the heart of the Father. And what wrecks my heart is that if the gospel is about coming home, what wrecks my heart is that there are so many of us in this room right now that think we can't come home. Man, that's what wrecks my heart. That we hear a story like this. We read verses like John 3:16, for God so loved the world, and there are some people in this room that says, yeah, but me. As if you're the exemption. And we got to play the extremes, right? Because for every single one of us that are in this room and you think your sin is so dirty and your past is so dark that there's not a chance the God of the universe would love you, that the other extreme is there are a bunch of us also in this room that we just do enough church to be dangerous. And you know what I mean by that? You go through the motions, you show up, you check the boxes. On the outside, it looks like you're doing all the things, but your heart does not belong to the Father. And so we got both extremes. And you know what I love about that? That in the middle of all of that, right? The sinner and the tax collector and the Pharisees. Do you know what stands in the middle of Jesus? You know what stands in the middle of the cross? Let me tell you what's beautiful about the cross. The cross does two things. First off, for all you type A, I'm going to crush it. I just need a little bit of God to get me by. The cross shows us just how awful we are. The cross brings conviction. It says, this is what had to happen to save you. But I know you think you're awesome. And, you know, maybe you started basketball in high school, and maybe you had a 4.0, but outside the walls here in the real world, your life is a mess. And you're lying to yourself because you do not have it under control. And you are one stressful moment away from breaking. And the evidence of that is the cross, that you're not that awesome. And Jesus had to be broken and bloodied and murdered to set you free from all the dirty sins you've done and are hiding. I want to tell you this in love, friend. You're never going to not need Jesus in your life. So the cross, it tells us, this is how messed up you are. But you know what the cross also does? The cross says, this is how much God loves you. Yes, that is true. But this is also true, that he who knew no sin became sin to set us free. For God so loved you that he sent Jesus to save you. Jesus says, I didn't come to condemn, I came to save. So I'm here today to encourage you in the room. I don't know what extreme that you're sitting on. I don't know which camp you want to call your own, but I'm letting you know, it's not about the camp. It's not about the rules, it's about relationship. And Jesus is standing in the middle of this moment and he's saying, the cross tells us that we are not too good for his grace and we are not too far from it, friend. The scandal of the grace of the Father is the fact that whether it's legalism or license, both get to come to the party. Both get to come to the party. And only one son gets it. And it's not the son you think. Like, if you just read this story, you would think in your mind that it would be the older brother who would understand what's supposed to happen, but it's not. It's the younger son. That the younger son, face down, deep in his sin and his brokenness, what does he say? I'm just going to work hard to get myself out of this mess. You won't. He says, I got to go home. And he gets up and he heads home, stained with pig filth, reeking of alcohol and prostitutes. And as he's working up the speech, the Father comes and he embraces him and saves him. And that same invitation is available for the older brother sitting outside pouting because daddy didn't get him a fattened calf. And the same grace to the son is the same grace offered to the older brother, but only one takes it. And I just can't believe it because that's the point of what I'm about to say next. Everything I've said is just to get us to hear. Jesus isn't just redefining the Father. Jesus isn't just redefining sin. But I think the message for some of us today is this. Jesus is redefining what it means to be lost. It's the kind of loss that hides in religion, it hides in performance, and it carries a bitterness that's quiet. The most shocking plot twist of this story as we start to land this plane is that the lover of prostitutes gets saved and gets to eat steak, and the man of morals is outside the party. It's not, you got to get this, it's not because he broke the rules that he doesn't come into the party. What does he say? He said, I followed all the rules. I did everything you said, and I'm not coming in. That's what's most shocking about this story, is that the man of morals is lost and he doesn't even know it. He doesn't even know it. The gospel is not about who's better. It's just about who's willing. Who's willing to come home? If you're here today and in your heart, you would say, Adam, I'm struggling. I'm struggling here, all right? I got a little older brother in me, and I'm having a hard time with what you're saying because, Adam, I do try really hard. I'm obedient. I pray. I show up to church. I give. I serve. I do a lot of things. Adam, that should count for something. I believe at a certain extent, maybe God owes me a little bit. What do I get for that? If that's where you're at today, I just need you to know that Jesus, he is your model. Jesus is your example. Maybe even he's your boss, but I'm going to tell you something. Jesus ain't your savior. You are. How exhausting is it to try to perform, to try to control every single thing that's happening in your life? And the only time you break is when it breaks. Jesus is looking. The reason why he's sharing the story is he wants to set you free. He's saying, hey, I'm right here. Let me help you. The gospel is not a help wanted sign. All right? It's not a help wanted sign. The gospel is a help given. That Jesus didn't show up to say, all right, who's going to help me do this? Because I don't think we can make it work. Jesus says, I'm the helper. I'm the one that's going to do this, and I'm just going to let you play. Come on, let's go. That's what he's trying to do. And the point of the message is that Jesus isn't looking for good people. Jesus is looking for new people. Because let's just lean in a second. Friends, listen. We're not that good. We're not. And the stress of trying to keep up with that appearance is going to destroy you. So what does Jesus say? We've been reading this verse every single week, been kind of sneaking in at the end of the sermon, 2 Corinthians chapter 5. Christ's love controls us. We don't control him, he controls us with his love. Since we believe that Christ died for all, we also believe that we have all died to our old life. He died for everyone so that those who receive his new life will no longer live for themselves. Instead, they will live for Christ who died and was raised for them. This means that anyone, whether you're the younger son or you're the older brother, whether you're inside the house dancing and eating steak or you're outside throwing a fit, anyone who belongs to Christ has become a new person. The old life is gone and the new life has begun. We ain't looking for good. We're looking for new. And so that's the offer today as we close this out. And I'm going to invite Dave and Amelia to come up. And we're gonna close here in a second with song. But I just want to lean in and just have a moment together before we do that. I just want you to know that's the offer on the table today. New life through Christ. is that what would be true in this story, that's what's true of the Father to the sons, is also true of me and is also true of you. That the Father just wants your heart. And so it's my hope today that those of us in this room, whether we're a younger brother or we're an older brother, that today you would listen to the heart of the Father and you would just come home. That you would just come home. Because anyone who is in Christ, the old life, the past, follow God long enough, and what you're going to realize is there's going to be days where you're going to have to definitely repent of your sins and your mistakes. Listen, just because Jesus saved me when I was 16 doesn't mean that there hasn't been a day over the last 20 years, 20 plus years, that I haven't had to say, Father, I am sorry. I know I'm still a sinner, saved by the grace of God, but I know one thing that I'm not, friends. I'm not lost. I'm not lost. And so the offer on the table today is to come home.